morning. Welcome to the second day of our October morning panel. I am Mike Pirtle from Omaha, and I'm pleased to be joined today on my right by Judge Francie Reedman of Gretna, and on my left by Judge Larry Welch of Plattsmouth. We have two cases on the call this morning. We will take them in the order they were listed. We'll remind you that we are live streaming on NET, so if there's any confidential information, you'll want to handle that accordingly, and then the video and audio will be archived for your access later. So with that, we will begin. The first case is In Re Interest of Nehemiah H. You may approach.
May it please the Court, good morning. I'm Mary Rose Donahue, Assistant Public Defender at the Douglas County Public Defender's Office. I've been appointed to represent the appellant, Nehemiah H. I would ask to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This is a case about the juvenile court's abuse of discretion when it adjudicated Nehemiah as a child or a juvenile who comes to me, within the meaning of Nebraska Revised Statute 43247-3B in that he was truant from school. Number one, that the court allowed hearsay testimony in this trial in the form of a school support liaison for Omaha Public Schools. This was the only evidence that was offered. There were no exhibits received. There was one witness that testified. So all of the evidence that the court received was through this one individual.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit. Did you say abuse of discretion?
Yeah.
Is that our standard?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Is it abuse of discretion or de novo on the record?
Thank you, Your Honor. I do believe that's de novo on the record.
Okay.
I appreciate it. I apologize.
Nope. You threw me. I had to rethink it.
also, that even if the court does find that his testimony was not hearsay, there's still the issue of whether or not there was sufficient evidence to find that Nehemiah was truant. There was very little evidence provided that the school documented efforts that are required in Nebraska Revised Statute 79209 Subdivision 2. The Nebraska courts have held for decades, since 1979, that these mandatory compulsory education statutes and the juvenile code regarding truancies are two separate statutes. They are not to be construed together. There was an amendment to the law in 2014 which specifically stated, essentially tied these two together. In 2014, the legislature amended the compulsory education statute, which specifically included three defenses to three actions by the state. Number one is whether there was a charge against that 79201 through 79209, which is a mandatory education. In addition, that if the school did not document efforts that are required in this statute, that is a defense. They also included two other causes of actions in which that would be a defense. Number one would be educational neglect, where a parent is charged with failing to get their child to school. That is under the juvenile code, and also the truancy. So in reviewing that amendment a little bit more closely since the brief, the timeline between when Samantha C. in particular, where the Nebraska Supreme Court reiterated again very clearly that these two different statutes are in no way connected. That was approximately, by my estimate, anywhere between 60 or 90 days before this amendment went into law. So while Samantha C. and the holding in Samantha C. and the holding on the cases in which Samantha C. relied upon may be good law, the legislature has made clear since that point that these are absolutely to be construed together.
Well, didn't Samantha C., wasn't the court saying, addressing jurisdiction and juvenile court's ability to adjudicate a child as opposed to your situation where we're talking about a defense?
I believe that the appellant in that case essentially made the same argument that I'm making here today, but that the court's response was in the form of a jurisdictional question. I believe that what they argued was that there wasn't sufficient evidence that the school provided this family with the, specifically it's called the collaborative attendance plan, that there was not enough information to show that they had provided the efforts that the legislature requires.
And therefore, the juvenile court didn't have jurisdiction to hear the case, didn't have jurisdiction to adjudicate the child.
My understanding is that it was a sufficiency of the evidence argument in that as well. But the court's answer was there is no precondition upon the juvenile court taking jurisdiction. I'm not making that argument. It's merely a sufficiency of the evidence. The 79-209, it lays out that this plan, there should be one or more meetings at a minimum of a school attendance officer, a school social worker, or a school administrator, or his or her designee, the person who has legal or actual charge of the child and the child, to address these barriers. The plan should consider illness, educational counseling,
evaluation. Didn't Mr. Washington testify that they wrote two different letters to the parents?
So that's another issue. His testimony was confusing and contradictory. On direct examination, he testifies that he personally sent two letters, that he personally sent heads this collaborative plan. He cannot recall the date, and then on cross-examination, he admits that he did not personally send out that letter. It's very unclear during his testimony who did what. He speaks in terms of we, the team.
Is that a question of fact for the judge then?
It is, but I believe that, I believe that, I mean, his evidence or his testimony was not credible and that he changes essentially who does what. I do not believe that he was established as a custodian of the records.
But there were no records offered.
Correct.
So does it matter if he personally did it or he with knowledge of how the school operates?
I think that it does because he testified that the information in this system to which he testified to, so where there was no evidence offered, no physical documents offered, he was testifying as to the information in this system, which we would argue is hearsay.
You'd have to have the individual or individuals who actually inputted the information into the computer system and somebody to come testify about the computer system and... Is that what you're arguing, that it takes?
I don't believe so, but I think it would be an individual who had a little bit more information about what was going on. He testified that his duties at the school are quite extensive. He testified that he had his duties were truancies, enrollments, special education students, code of conduct, expulsions, reassignments, suspensions, transportation and meeting with community agencies between two schools, and that approximately he was meeting the needs of 2,400 students.
He was a 17-year employee.
Correct. He also testified that he was no guru of the system, that he never personally inputted information. And I think that's concerning because what the state is asking you to find is that they have met their burden to show with a three-pronged system that this is information, number one, that was conducted in the regular course of business. He did testify that the county attorney's office had required them to alter their documentation practice, which I think calls into question whether or not this is in the course of regular business practices. Also that it was made at the time or near the time of the event by the person who had firsthand knowledge. He testifies on one hand that he's never inputted any information into the system, but then he also takes credit for essentially meeting some of these requirements to the school. So it begs the question, you either didn't do anything or you did do things and someone else inputted it, which I think calls into question the trustworthiness of this system.
What are you saying the state has to do to prove the information in the system? I mean, how detailed and how many witnesses are they going to have to call?
I think it's someone with more knowledge of the system. He was very frank that he had very little knowledge of the system. He had no idea who had access. Someone with more information. I don't know clearly where that line is, but I think he falls below that.
Did you have any information to indicate his information wasn't accurate?
I did it on cross-examination in terms of when he said he sent out. There was one specific letter that he said that he sent out. On cross-examination, I had information that he, in fact, did not. And he did then admit that he did not send that letter.
What about with respect to the 25 days? I mean, the issue here, did he really miss 25 days? Did you put in any evidence at all to refute the fact that he actually missed 25 days, or is this just an attack that they just can't come up with enough affirmative proof that it really was 25 days?
Your Honor, we did not present any evidence at trial on behalf of the defense. I think part of the concern was that there was no evidence. It's the law that has been that merely missing 20 days of school is in fact of itself indicative of truancy is no longer true with this amendment. There now has to be demonstrated efforts by the school that are documented and provided to the court during a trial of what their steps are. This amendment to 79209 makes that clear, and I don't believe that that has been, and I believe in that sense it would be a burden shifting if they have not shown that these efforts have been made by the school.
So are you not contesting the fact that, I know in one spot he testified without objection that the child didn't miss 25 days, and then in another time, he said by the time, I think, the letter got sent out, the child had missed 30 days. Are you not contesting that?
We are contesting that in terms of hearsay, in terms of his ability to testify.
Well, both of that testimony came in without objection. Both times when he talked about the 25 days, and then later he talked about the 30 days, there was no objection made to those questions.
Your Honor, I apologize. I thought that there was objections to every single one of the instances in which he testified.
There had been one objection earlier, but when that testimony came in, there were no objections.
I would let the record stand then at that point. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Pinkel. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Your Honors, Ms. Donahue, good morning. My name is Emily Pecklow, and I'm a Deputy County Attorney for the State, and I am representing the appellee, the State of Nebraska, in this matter. The issue before you today is whether the juvenile court was correct in finding that the evidence at the time of the adjudication in December of 2017, established on proof beyond a reasonable doubt that the appellant did not attend 25 days since enrolled at North High Magnet School during the 2016-2017 school year, and therefore came within the meaning of the Nebraska Revised Statute 43-247-3B.
How do you respond to appellant's argument that the evidence was insufficient in this case?
Your Honor, it's the State's position that the evidence was sufficient. Mr. Washington testified that they sent out two letters, albeit it was a little fuzzy. He did clarify that he had, I think the term he used, stuffed and sent out the second letter. He testified that it was another person that did, in fact, write it, but it was the same wording that he himself would have used, and that all school support liaisons use throughout the Omaha Public School District. So there were two letters sent out along with that. In the first letter, it contained a date for the collaborative plan meeting that was supposed to be held. It also contained his phone number that the parents could call. And I think in both letters, he testified that he required the parents to call him if that date didn't exactly match up with the parents' schedule. They could have called him and set up a different meeting. On top of that, he also sent a pass down to one of the students' classes to call him out of class to have a meeting with him. The student wasn't there at the time. So it's the State's position that, I mean, going along with Nebraska Revised Statute 79209, they definitely met subsection 2. There were several letters that were sent. There was a lot of communication, at least on the school's part, attempting with the parents. The parents just didn't respond.
And neither of those letters were offered as exhibits, were they?
No, they were not.
So going back first to the issue of whether there's evidence in the record that supports that he missed 25 days, there were no exhibits offered. The state didn't offer the report that would document that, in fact, he missed 25 days, correct?
That is correct.
Why not?
To be quite frank, the attorney who's on record or was on record at the time was out on maternity leave. The attorney that picked up this case was pretty new. Since then, we have implemented a system where we do offer at least the referral into evidence. So, I mean, we have definitely, going forward, made an effort to fix that.
I get that. So with respect, then, to the first objection, counsel's point, when Mr. Washington saying, well, he missed 25 days, referring to the report without putting the report in, is she right? Was that hearsay?
I don't believe so. It would fall underneath the business records exception to hearsay, which I believe is under...
Did the state argue, though, that at trial?
I believe so.
But does the business records exception, doesn't that apply to documentary evidence? Does it actually apply to testimony?
I believe so. The exact wording of the statute is... give me one second here, Your Honor. A record is admissible under the Nebraska Revised Statute 27803, subsection 5, if a memorandum, report, record, or data compilation in any form of acts, events, or conditions other than opinions or diagnosis made at or near the time of such acts, events, or conditions in the course of a regularly conducted activity, if it was the regular course of such activity to make such memorandum, report, record, or data compilation at the time of such act, event, or condition, or within a reasonable time thereafter, as shown by the testimony of the custodian or other qualified witness.
So doesn't the first part say a record is admissible? Isn't that a document?
Yes, Your Honor, but it also goes on to say that it can be shown by the testimony of the custodian or other qualified witness.
To lay the foundation that the evidence meets the requirements of the statute that you just read.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that the document can be offered, right?
I would argue that this falls also under the data compilation, although it's not technically a record in and of itself. We don't have the referral on the record. He does testify to the system, ALF itself, and how things are imported into that and the data that comes out of it, and that goes into how he writes letters and contacts the parents and goes on with his attendance.
Which he didn't do in this case. He didn't write the letters.
He
stuffed an envelope.
I believe the second one is one that he stuffed, but I believe that he testified that he physically wrote out the 5-day letter that went out on in September 2007.
But the question is 25 days, right? That's the threshold?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you address Samantha C. and whether it's applicable?
Sure. So it's the state's position. In Samantha C., there is a paragraph that states the legislator's omission of any preconditions to the juvenile court proceedings and its explicit disclaimer of any limitation upon county attorney's involvement defeats Samantha's argument. A county attorney is empowered to file a petition in the juvenile court under 43-247-3B, regardless of whether the services outlined in 79-209 have been provided. We therefore hold that Nebraska Revised Statute 79-209 does not impose any preconditions on the juvenile court. So it's the state's position that Samantha C. Obviously is good law. Whether or not there is a new, I guess not new technically, but the legislator's opinion that came out afterwards.
The amendment,
you
mean, to the statute?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's the state's position that this court should follow along with the ruling in Samantha C., mainly in that there are no preconditions, meaning like the meeting or the written or verbal communication by the school provided for in Statute 79-209.
Well, the amendment deals with adding a defense in the event that it's not complied with. Is that your understanding?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And in this particular case, do they have a good defense? Do they have a good defense that, in fact, it was not complied with?
State's argument that no.
Why?
The school had provided several efforts. The two letters, along with those two letters, there was a list of resources that the parents could reach out to if they didn't want to reach out to the school. It contained the contact information for Mr. Washington. He'd also sent a pass to the kid. I mean, it's the state's position that the school was doing all that they could. It's just that the parents and the child weren't responding.
I mean, if you look at the amendment, it looks like they want the parents to work with the school first in the event of truancy before we get to this point.
That's correct.
Basically your understanding of it?
Yes, that's the state's understanding.
Okay, and your position is you can't do much if they won't respond?
That's correct.
Okay.
I think there was one point in the testimony that Mr. Washington testified that it was hard in the first place to get into contact with these parents, and then when the parents don't respond, it's exponentially harder to help this kid out. I mean, most of the information in the elements that are contained in the statute, like the educational piece, the home piece, most of what's going on comes from the parents. So it's hard to come up with a plan for the specific child when there is no background information. The parents aren't helping out. It's just extremely hard.
Okay. Anything further?
No, Your Honor. The state would just pray that you affirm the decision of the juvenile court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time for rebuttal? Do you want to waive 3 seconds, or do you have any rebuttal? We'll give you 10 seconds. How's that?
Your Honor, I would note that the evidence in the trial showed that there was one attempt during an entire school year by this individual to contact the child. I think the most basic, this is a high schooler, the most basic way to see if what's going on is simply to ask the child. He testified he had never met the child. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is submitted. We'll take it under advisement. We thank you both for being here. You are excused. Thank you.